Chapter 14. They started moving the wagons early next morning. There was no time to talk to Katrina in the bustle of inspanning and working the wagons across the corduroy bridge. Sean spent most of the morning in the riverbed, and the white sand bounced the heat up at him. He threw off his shirt and sweated like a wrestler. He trotted beside Katrina's wagon when they ran it through the riverbed. She looked once at his naked chest and arms. Her cheeks darkened in the shadow of her bonnet, and she dropped her eyes and didn't look at him again. With only the two wagons that were going back to fetch the ivory still on the north bank, and the rest safely across, Sean could relax. He washed in one of the pools, put on his shirt, and went across to the south bank, looking forward to a long afternoon of Katrina's company. Uma met him. "Thank you, my bear. The girls have made you a parcel of cold meat and a bottle of coffee to drink on your way." Sean's face went slack. He'd forgotten all about that stinking ivory. As far as he was concerned, Upa and Porus could keep the lot of it. "Don't worry about us any more now, Menhir. I know how it is with a man who's a man. When there's work to do, everything else comes after." Katrina put the food in his hands. Sean looked for a sign from her. One sign and he'd defy even Uma.
"Don't be too long," she whispered.
The thought that he might shirk work had obviously not even occurred to her. Sean was glad he hadn't suggested it. It was a long ride back to the elephant.
"You've taken your time, haven't you?"
Upa greeted him with sour suspicion.
"You'd better get to work if you don't want to lose some of your share."
Taking out the tusks was a delicate task. A slip of the axe would scar the ivory and half its value. They worked in the heat, with a blue haze of flies around their faces, settling on their lips and crawling into their nostrils and eyes. The carcasses had started to rot, and the gases ballooned their bellies and escaped in posthumous belches. They sweated as they worked, and the blood caked their arms to the elbows. But each hour the wagon filled higher, until on the third day they loaded the last tusk. Sean reckoned his share at £1,200, the equivalent of a satisfactory day on the stock exchange. He was in a good mood on the morning when they started back to the camp, but it deteriorated as the day wore on, and they struggled with the heavily loaded wagons. The rain seemed to have made up its mind at last, and now the sky's belly hung down as heavily as that of a pregnant sow. The clouds trapped the heat beneath them, and the men panted, and the oxen complained mournfully. At mid-afternoon, they heard the first far thunder.
"It'll be on us before we pass the river," fretted Upa. "See if you can't get some pace out of those oxen."
They reached Sean's camp an hour after dark, and threw his share of the ivory out of the wagons almost without stopping. Then they went down to the river and across the bridge to the south bank.
"My mother will have food ready," Jan Paulus called back to Sean. "When you've washed, come across and eat with us."
Sean had supper with the Leroux, but his attempts to get Katrina by herself were neatly countered by Upa, whose suspicions were now confirmed. The old man played his trump card immediately after supper and ordered Katrina to bed. Sean could only shrug helplessly in reply to Katrina's appealing little glance. When she had gone, Sean went back to his own camp. He was dizzy with fatigue, and he fell into his cot without bothering to undress. The rains opened their annual offensive with a midnight broadside of thunder. It startled Sean to his feet before he was awake. He pulled open the front of the wagon and heard the wind coming.
"Ember Janey, get the cattle into the lager. Make sure all the canvas is secure." "It is done already, Inkosi.
I have lashed the wagons together so the oxen cannot stampede, and I have...
Then the wind whipped his voice away. It came out of the east, and it frightened the trees so they thrashed their branches in panic. It drummed on the wagon canvas and filled the air with dust and dry leaves. The oxen turned restlessly within the lager. Then came the rain, stinging like hail, drowning the wind and turning the air to water. It swamped the sloping ground that could not drain it fast enough. It blinded and it deafened. Sean went back to his cot and listened to its fury. It made him feel drowsy. He pulled the blankets up to his chin and slept. In the morning, he found his oilskins in the chest at the foot of his cot. They crackled as he pulled them on. He climbed out of the wagon. The cattle had churned the inside of the lager to calf-deep mud, and there was no chance of fire for breakfast. Although the rain was still falling, the noise was out of proportion to its strength. Sean paused in his inspection of the camp. He thought about it, and suddenly he knew that it was the flood voice of the Limpopo that he heard. Sliding in the mud, he ran out of the lager and stood on the bank of the river. He stared at the mad water. It was so thick with mud, it looked solid, and it raced so fast it appeared to be standing still. It humped up over piles of submerged rock, gullied through the deeps and hissed in static waves through the shallows. The branches and tree trunks in it whisked past so swiftly that they did little to dispel the illusion that the river was frozen in this brown convulsion. Reluctantly, Sean lifted his eyes to the far bank. The LaRue wagons were gone.
"Katrina," he said, with the sadness of the might have been. Then again, "Katrina," with the sense of his loss melting in the flame of his anger, and he knew that his wanting was not just the itch that is easily scratched and forgotten, but that it was the true ache, the one that gets into your hands and your head and your heart, as well as your loins. He couldn't let her go. He ran back to his wagon and threw his clothes into the cot. "I'll marry her," he said, and the word startled him. He stood naked, with an awed expression on his face. "I'll marry her," he said again. It was an original thought, and it frightened him a little. He took a pair of shorts out of his chest and put his legs into them. He pulled them up and buttoned the fly. "I'll marry her." He grinned at his own daring. "I'm damned if I won't." He buckled his belt on and tied a pair of veldschoen to it by their laces. He jumped down into the mud. The rain was cold on his bare back, and he shivered briefly. Then he saw Ember Janey coming out of one of the other wagons, and he ran.
"Nkosi! Nkosi, what are you doing?"
Sean put his head down and ran faster, with Ember Janey chasing him out into the bank of the river.
"It's madness. Let us talk about it first," Ember Janey shouted. "Please, Nkosi, please!"
Sean slipped in the mud and slithered down the bank. Ember Janey jumped down after and caught him at the edge of the water. But the mud had coated Sean's body like grease, and Ember Janey couldn't hold him. Sean twisted out of his hands and sprang far out. He hit the water flat and swam on his back, trying to avoid the undertow. The river swept him away. A wave slapped into his mouth, and he doubled up to cough. Immediately the river caught him by the heels and pulled him under the surface. It let him go again, just long enough to snatch air. Then it stirred him in a whirlpool and sucked him under once more. He came up, beating at the water with his arms. Then it tumbled him over a cascade, and he knew by the pain in his chest that he was drowning. He swooped down a chute of swift water between rocks
and it didn't matter any more. He was too tired. Something scraped against his chest, and he put out his hand to protect himself. His fingers closed round a branch, and his head lifted out of the water. He drank air, and then he was clinging to the branch, still alive and wanting to live. He started kicking, edging across the current, riding the river with his arms around the log. One of the eddies beneath the south bank swung the log in under the branches of a tree. He reached up, caught them, and dragged himself out. He knelt in the mud, and water came gushing out of him, half through his mouth, half through his nose. He had lost his Veldenschuhen. He belched painfully and looked at the river. How fast was it moving? How long had he been in the water? He must be 15 miles below the wagons. He wiped his face with his hand. It was still raining. He stood shakily and faced upstream. It took him 3 hours to reach the spot opposite his wagons. Embijeni and the others waved in wild relief when they saw him, but their shouts could not carry across the river. Sean was cold now, and his feet were sore. The tracks of the Leroux wagons were dissolving in the rain. He followed them, and at last the pain in his feet healed as he saw the flash of canvas in the rain just ahead of him.
"Name of a name!" shouted Jan Paulus. "How did you cross the river?"
"I flew. How else?" said Sean.
"Where's Katrina?"
Paulus started to laugh, leaning back in the saddle.
"So that's it, then. You haven't come all this way to say goodbye to me."
Sean flushed. "All right, laughing boy. That's enough merriment for today. Where is she?" Upa came galloping back towards them. He asked his first question when he was 50 yards away, and his fifth as he arrived. From experience, Sean knew there was no point in trying to answer them. He looked beyond the two Leroux and saw her coming. She was running back from the lead wagon, her bonnet hanging from its ribbon round her throat and her hair bouncing loosely with each step. She held her skirts out of the mud, her cheeks flushed darker than the brown of her face, and her eyes were very green. Sean ducked under the neck of Upa's horse and went wet, muddy, and eager to meet her. Then the shyness stopped them, and they stood paces apart.
"Katrina, will you marry me?"
She went pale. She stared at him, then turned away. She was crying, and Sean felt the bottom drop out of his stomach.
"No!" shouted Upa furiously. "She won't marry you. Leave her alone, you big baboon. You made her cry. Get out of here. She's only a baby. Get out of here."
He forced his horse between them.
"You hold your mouth, you old busybody."
Uma came panting back to join the discussion.
"What do you know about it anyway? Just because she's crying doesn't mean she doesn't want him."
"I thought he was going to let me go," sobbed Katrina. "I thought he didn't care."
Sean whooped and tried to dodge round Upa's horse.
"You leave her alone,"
shouted Upa desperately, manoeuvring his horse to cut Sean off.
"You made her cry. I tell you, she's crying."
Katrina was undoubtedly crying. She was also trying to get around Upa's horse.
"Vat ha!" shouted Jan Paulus. "Get her, man! Go and get her!"
Uma caught the horse by the reins and dragged it away. She was a powerful woman. Sean and Katrina collided and held tight.
"Hey, that's it, man!"
Jan Paulus jumped off his horse and pounded Sean's back from behind. Unable to protect himself, Sean was driven forward apace with each blow. Much later, Upa muttered sulkily,
"She can have 2 wagons for her dowry."
"3," said Katrina.
"4," said Uma.
Very well, four. Take your hands off him, girl. Haven't you any shame? Hastily, Katrina dropped her arm from Sean's waist. Sean had borrowed a suit of clothing from Porus, and they were all standing round the fire. It had stopped raining, but the low clouds were prematurely bringing on the night. "And four of the horses?" Uma prompted her husband. "Do you want to beggar me, woman?" "Four horses?" repeated Uma. All right, four horses." Upa looked at Katrina. His eyes were stricken. "She's only a baby, man. She's only 15 years." 16, said Uma.
"Nearly 17, said Katrina. "And anyway, you've promised. Pa, you can't go back on your word now."
Upa sighed. Then he looked at Sean, and his face hardened. "Paulus, get the Bible out of my wagon. This big baboon is going to swear an oath." Jan Paulus put the Bible on the tailboard of the wagon. It was thick, and the cover was of black leather, dull with use. "Come here," Upa said to Sean. "Put your hand on the book. Don't look at me. Look up, man, look up. Now, say after me. I do most solemnly swear to look after this woman. Don't gobble, speak slower. Until I can find a priest to say the proper words. Should I fail in this, then I ask you, God, to blast me with lightning, sting me with serpents, burn me in eternal fire." Upa completed the list of atrocities. Then he grunted with satisfaction and tucked the Bible under his arm. "He won't have a chance to do all that, you. I'll get you first." Sean shared Jan Polis's wagon that night. He wasn't in a mood for sleep, and anyway, Jan Polis snored. It was raining again in the morning, depressing weather for farewells. Jan Polis laughed, Henrietta cried, and Uma did both. Upa kissed his daughter. "Be a woman, like your mother," he said. Then he scowled at Sean. "Remember, just you remember." Sean and Katrina stood together and watched the trees and the curtain of rain hide the wagon train. Sean held Katrina's hand. He could feel the sadness on her. He put his arm round her, and her dress was damp and cold. The last wagon disappeared, and they were alone in a land as vast as solitude. Katrina shivered and looked up at the man beside her. He was so big and overpoweringly male. He was a stranger. Suddenly she was frightened. She wanted to hear her mother's laugh and see her brother and father riding ahead of her wagon the way it had always been.
"Oh, please, I want—"
she pulled out from his arm. She never finished that sentence, for she looked at his mouth, and his lips were full and burnt dark by the sun. They were smiling. Then she looked at his eyes, and her panic smoothed away. With those eyes watching over her, she was never to feel frightened again. Not until the very end, and that was a long time away. Going into his love was like going into a castle, a thick-walled place, a safe place where no one else could enter. The first feeling of it was so strong that she could only stand quietly and let the warmth wrap her.